Hey, everybody, I'm Rick Sanchez, and this is the Week in Review.
You know, they're running for He-Man Women Haters Club.
I want you to do this with me. Let's do this together. Would you be my running mate, and let's get this thing on the road?
AIPAC, I'm coming to tear your kingdom down.
Damn, Israel targets and removes a Missouri member of Congress, and she is firing back, as you just heard. By the way, Ukrainian troops cross into Russia. Kamala Harris picks the quintessential Midwesterner as her running mate. All this and more, as they like to say. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is the Week in Review. Let's do it. As you can see in some of the videos that we use to tease the show, as we like to say, it has been one heck of a week. Man, there has been so much going on. In fact, in the last like 2 or 3 weeks, it's like everything has just transitioned, it seemed. Not in a sexual way. Let's talk politics mostly at the beginning of this show, because there's a lot of politics going on. And to recap it, we're going to be joined by the hosts of the Critical Hour on Radio Sputnik, Dr. Wilmer Leon, and Dr. Garland Nixon, both of whom are, and Garland Nixon, I should say, both of whom are, I just made you a doctor, both of whom have always joined us and always have interesting palaver to share with us. Okay, guys, let's start with the Democrats have picked their VP. Some people think it matters a lot. Some people think it matters nothing. The winner is Governor Tim Walz of the great state of Minnesota. I only say great state because that's where I went to school, graduated from. He, by the way, is credited with and maybe chosen for pulling off what is really a Trumpism, right? I mean, nobody did this better than Trump, right? Branding people with like Little Marco and Crooked Hillary and, you know, that type of thing. It was him, the governor of Minnesota, this dude Walz, who came up with the description against their opponents, which seems to have, in a Trumpian way, stuck. Here it is.
We do not like what has happened where we can't even go to Thanksgiving dinner with our uncle because you end up in some weird fight that is unnecessary. And I think bringing back people together, well, it's true. These guys are just weird. And it is. You know, they're running for He-Man Women Haters Club or something. That's what they go at. That's not what people are interested in.
We're not going to play their game. We called them out for the weird nonsense that they believe. And we presented a different argument to the American public. One where everybody matched. One where we can achieve. One where we solve problems.
I don't know. Garland, what do you think of this guy? What do you think of that strategy, which seems to be a hell of a lot more effective than just saying that all Republicans are, I don't know, Hitler or something like we've heard in the past?
Yeah, I think it's going to be very effective amongst the talking heads. You know, if the people at CNN and MSNBC were voting, hey, he'd win they'd win it unanimously. Right. But it's non-substantive. You look right now at Kamala Harris's website, at her campaign website, there's nothing there. You can buy merchandise. You can learn about how she was pushed around in a stroller as a child, the same with Tim Walz. But they're not saying anything about the issues that affect Americans, and Americans are very concerned about inflation. And they're concerned about, you know, their everyday life and how high things have gotten. So this is, sounds great. It's weird. It's whatever. These are the things they'll chat about. People aren't voting on that. They're voting on real things.
But here's the deal. I mean, I looked at a poll yesterday in terms of independents. Trump used to be winning by 14. This new poll has Kamala Harris up by 9, which means that's a 23-point swing since the old guy stepped down. There's no question in my mind that even though you say she's non-substantive, she's really good at reading the lines, showing up where she needs to show up, standing where they tell her to stand. And I kind of think if Trump did a little bit of that, he'd be doing better. Doctor, what do you think?
Oh, he'd be doing much better. The problem is he doesn't listen to his advisors. He doesn't listen to his campaign staff because he's been very successful at being him and doing him. And it's very hard to get successful people to listen to other people, because in their minds, hey, I've been doing it this way all my life. I've been successful doing it this way all my life. What do I need you for?
Yeah.
Now, that's why, by the way,
I was just going to add to your point, and that's why he's talking about things like, oh, she's not really Indian, she's black, or she's not really black and she's Indian. And I was thinking, dude, why are you even going there? Right? I mean,
but see, he's continuing to talk to those in the vacuum, to those in the echo chamber. He's not able now to tack to the center and expand the base, which is what you need to do in a general election. The weird moniker works because they're weird.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on the floor at the Republican convention, and Lil Marco, who I saw and spoke to, he's not really that short. So, yeah, he's, so, you know, you expect to see a circus, you expect to see him get out of a circus car. He's not that short. So, and other final point on this is that
branding
right now, this is working because we're still in a honeymoon.
Well, let me give you an example. But wait, you just said something that's fascinating, and I'm going to give you an example of when the branding does work. So she's supposed to be this overly scripted, overly produced, empty-headed person who offers absolutely nothing and just reads her lines. Here's a video of her, a fake staged video of her doing exactly that. Talk about people falling into the trap, just like I accused Trump of that. Now I'm accusing Kamala Harris. Watch this fake video of her supposedly telling Walz that he's been chosen. This is so staged. Watch.
Listen, I want you to do this with me. Let's do this together. Would you be my running mate and let's get this thing on the road?
I would be honored, Madam Vice President.
The joy that you're bringing back to the country, the enthusiasm that's out there, it'll be a privilege to take this with you across the country.
We're going to do this. We're going to win. And we're going to unify our country and remind everyone that we are fighting for the future for everyone. So let's get out there and get this done, okay?
I don't know about you, Garland, but if my boss came to me, or if anybody came to me and said, we want you to go and lie and stage something and pretend to be doing something that's actually already been done, I'd tell him to go to hell or fire me. I don't know about you. This tells me a lot about her. If she's lying about this, what else is she going to lie about later on? I'm bothered by this.
Well, you know, and this is what we get from in politics today, particularly the incumbent party right now. They don't have much of a record to run on. The record that they do have to run on is pretty bad. It would not certainly wouldn't get the Kamala Harris elected. So instead, they've got to do staged events. They've got to come up with names of weird for their other opponents, but they can't actually get into the weeds of policy. So it doesn't surprise me. This is what they're doing. It's like their foreign policy. They just make stuff up and say it. And she's not really good. I think they have to do that with her too. I think they're probably horrified at the idea of just letting Kamala Harris out there on her own to be herself.
But they don't have
that
to.
Would probably be far worse.
But they don't have to, and it's working. I mean, I mean, I gotta tell you, looking at the polls, they can't all be wrong, and most of them are saying this thing is flipping in her direction. So because she's basically, you know, reading her lines, I guess.
Well. And this is, we're still in the honeymoon period. We have to see how she manages the convention.
True.
And then once she comes out of the convention, or they, Harris and Walz, come out of the convention, then that's when we're gonna have to start hearing policy. And this whole thing just reminded me of being in the fourth grade when I asked Nancy Wall if she'd be my girlfriend, and I wrote her this little note. Check yes or check no. It was so juvenile that and transparent and fake.
So how'd you do with Nancy?
We're friends to this day.
Good. Let's talk about Israel. Speaking of U.S. foreign policy, Israel as a nation has just spent $25 million to remove 3 members of the U.S. Congress that they did not like. 2 of them are Democrats, and 1 of them is a Republican. Their latest takedown is U.S. Representative Cori Bush, who was replaced by a guy who took $8 million from Israel's lobby. Usually people taken out by AIPAC don't make waves. Cori Bush, interestingly enough, she's making a lot of waves. Listen to this.
AIPAC, I'm coming to tear your kingdom down.
Tear your kingdom down. I'm not sure what that means, but usually people say, oh, my God, these guys are so powerful and so strong. I'm just going to kind of leave the room and not let anybody notice that I was even here. She's coming out and saying, how's this going to play? What do you guys think of this? I mean, I don't know. Go ahead. Go ahead, Garland.
Let's start here. Jamal Bowman lost a couple of weeks ago, right? And
right.
One of the things that he did was he had an event at a park. He had AOC and Bernie Sanders there. A few years ago, he had that event, and there were 25,000 people there. He had the event here a few weeks, about a month or two ago. Nobody showed up. It was empty. Why? The money from AIPAC hurt him.
Scared.
But I think waving blue and yellow flags, saying, hooray, we just gave 200 million, 100 million more to the Nazis, while the people in Jamal Bowman and Cori Bush's district suffered because there's a lot of poverty and there's a lot of suffering. I think that's what got them. I think their people
didn't show up. If that's the case, then why did you need to spend $25 million to take somebody down who's a really crappy candidate?
I'm not saying that didn't influence it. I'm just saying the fact of the matter is that, you know, there are people in Congress right now that you could spend $1 billion, they wouldn't lose. Bernie Sanders, how would you take him out? The people there love him for whatever reason. There's a number of people like that. They didn't build. The money's wrong. I agree. The AIPAC money hurt them desperately, but they didn't put themselves in a position to win by doing what they were supposed to do in the first place.
But the point here is, and I don't know how you feel about this, Wilmer, but, you know, we're not talking about the mango industry. We're not talking about the, big oil or whatever. We're talking about a country. This is a country that is coming here choosing who is running the United States of America. While we have a you-know-what fit if Russia even puts a Facebook post criticizing a Democrat. That's just wrong.
In 2022, the Times of Israel ran a story that the Urban Empowerment Action Pack, backed by AIPAC, was targeting six or five members of Congress, the squad. That was 2022.
Mm-hmm.
In 2023, in June, the New York Times aired the piece, AIPAC is gonna put $100 million into the campaign. We heard crickets.
Yeah.
We heard nothing from the Congressional Black Caucus. They didn't say a word. What they should have said was, this is what is being reported. They're putting in $100 million. We need 100 million votes. Y'all better turn out. Y'all better turn out and stop this foolishness because this is not democracy. There was crickets. So now for Cori Bush to be making all that noise, the bell rang. You got knocked out.
Yeah.
The fight is over. The arena is empty. And now, like Michael Spinks, you want to get up off the map and walk around and say, well, wait a minute, who hit me? A day late and a dollar short.
But I just wish somebody would say, I don't care. I mean, I don't know nothing about Cori Bush. It doesn't look to me like she's a very attractive candidate. And I'm not crazy about her policy choices on most things. But you know what? If somebody wants to take it out, they should be Americans, not Israelis, not Russians, not Chinese, not Bahamians. It's like,
I will guarantee you this. That if the numbers turn upside down for Kamala Harris, that you'll start seeing the articles that are about Russia again. Guarantee you Russia will be up to no good if Kamala Harris's numbers tank, which I suspect they will at some point.
Even if they have to make it up just like they did last time. All right, that's a good place to stop for just a little bit. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the debt crisis taking place in the U.S. economy. And we're also going to talk a little bit about Venezuelan elections. That and a whole lot more. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to Direct Impact. I'm Rick Sanchez, and this is the Weekend Review. You know, and by the way, I'm joined by two of the finest people to have these conversations with, Dr. Wilmer Leon and Garland Nixon of the Critical Hour on Radio Sputnik. Thanks again, guys. Something happened this week, which I really caught my attention. It's almost like a new brewing world crisis out there, has everything to do with the U.S. debt, which has just ballooned to $34 trillion. How in the hell did the U.S. get into this predicament? The short answer is, or a big part of it, I should say, to be fair, defense spending. Endless wars that we didn't win, which we now need to rethink about as a policy, I would think. But let me just give you some of these numbers. I pulled the latest numbers. This is 2023. These are the ones that we have available. And let me show you what they look like. Last year, the U.S. spent $916 billion, almost $1 trillion on national defense. That's more than the next nine countries combined. This is about 1/6 of the federal budget, accounts for almost 40% of the global military spending. 40% we're responsible for. By the way, if our debt bubble bursts, you know who we're taking down with us? Our allies. Get me back up if you could, Vic, because I want to talk about this. This is important. So here's what I'm trying to say. The people who have loaned us the money so we can be in debt, right? Because our GDP is much lower than what we owe, right? Japan, they own $1 trillion of our debt. $1 trillion of our debt owned by Japan. We go down, they don't get that trillion. We can't. The UK, about $700 to $800 billion. Canada, between $300 and $400 billion. So these are our allies who are in this predicament because of our, I guess, what else would you call it? Irresponsibility. I mean, if you don't pay, if you can't pay your bills because you're spending too much money, I would call you irresponsible. I don't know. What do you think, Wilmer?
I think you're absolutely right. It's also not only are we involved in these wars, we are involved in wars that we started and we can't win. We started this conflict in Ukraine. We're trying our damnedest to pick a fight with China. We're trying our best to start a fight with Venezuela. We are walking around the world like the bully on the block, picking fights with people, and we're losing. We haven't won a war since Vietnam.
Yeah.
And also, I don't know.
No, we lost
how much
that one too.
Wait.
We lost that one too. What are you talking about? Vietnam? Oh, well, we got our butts kicked.
No, since World War II, we haven't won a war since World War II.
Well, Grenada, the sheep. We beat the sheep.
We did. And when you look at the debt, when you look at the war spending of the next two behind us, China and Russia, we're still double both of them combined, and they'll whip us as soon as they get the chance. This is making absolute. And it's $35 trillion debt against $25 trillion gross domestic product. You can't get a mortgage. You can't get a mortgage like that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. You wanted to say something about this as well.
Yeah, well, here's the other thing. We're not even counting state and local debt and debt from individuals, corporate debt. I mean, that doesn't really tell you the story of just how bad the economic situation is in the United States. And it's simple. This neoliberal capitalist, not just capitalist, but this neoliberal system that we find ourselves in is one that is built on debt. We've gone around the world creating debt by other countries and then controlling the countries as a result of them being indebted to us, particularly in the global South. And now the chickens are coming home to roost. And if you look at such things right here as student loans, our government is literally doing the same thing to the people in our country that they've been doing to countries in the global South for many, many years.
Yeah.
And the debt is blowing up and we just can't afford to run the world anymore. We don't run the world and it's expensive to try to run the world, especially when you can't.
So here's another one. Go ahead.
Just really quickly, in the past, the debt that we've created has been based upon the dollar. Now, those countries, they're de-dollarizing. So as we move forward, that's going to have a dramatic. We can't just now print more money to get out of debt because they're moving off the dollar.
That's why I was mentioning that the people we're hurting are our allies. So the non-global South countries are the ones that will go down if we continue this path. And we're talking about the countries that we've depended on to have our backs. Well, they're not going to have our backs because they're not going to have any money to have our backs. It's a fascinating conversation developed this week, and we saw the incident in Japan. We may be seeing more of that moving forward. Now, let's talk about UK. Disturbances there have broken out in the UK as citizens confront police over immigration policies that many believe are changing their country for the worse. We've put together a minute of footage, more or less, just to show you. I'll talk over it. But this is what it looked like and still is going on, by the way, as we speak right now in the UK. Put it up, Victor. Look at all these. This is Belfast, by the way. These are tensions that seem to have been ignited by the tragic murder of three young girls, allegedly at the hands of a 17-year-old whose parents emigrated from Rwanda, though he was born there in the UK. At the heart of the unrest may be a feeling of economic frustration, with a lot of people struggling to make ends meet. While wealthier individuals seem to be thriving and receiving government support, some believe that this unrest is also fueled by a sense of displacement among white Christians who feel overwhelmed by an influx of immigrants that makes them feel like somebody else has suddenly taken over their country. Look at these pictures. I mean, they're from all over the place. I guess, Garland, I'll start with you. What were your thoughts as you were watching this story develop in Great Britain this week?
Well, two things. Number one, and that is the chickens are coming home to roost. You know, the British Empire and the U.S. Empire now have destabilized a lot of countries for years in Africa and the Middle East. And that's why these people from those various countries end up leaving those destabilized nations and looking for more stability in England. So the people who are in the streets are angry. And I do suspect, as you say, that a lot of it has to do with the economic downturn that the U.K. has taken. But they're blaming the wrong people. They're not blaming the ruling elite who destabilized those people's countries, who are sending all their money to Ukraine and causing their energy costs to go up because they're not getting the cheap energy for Russia. They're blaming the wrong people for their problems. That's my position.
Let's do this. Because you just mentioned something, and Wilmer, I want you to look at this, other developing story that's been taking place this week. The U.S. State Department has just come out and named They did this a few days ago, but they've just come out and named the losing side of the Venezuelan elections as the winners. They're doing so because they say that, according to the opposition, the election wasn't fair. Well, have you ever known an opposition to say it was? According to the opposition, the ballots don't add up. They say they conducted an exit poll during the election where they interviewed voters, and they say, look, we're sure that most of these people told us they did not vote for Maduro, so how the heck did he win? That's what they're saying, the folks who took the exit poll. So, who took the exit poll? Are you ready for this? Edison Research. And who is Edison Research? Here you go.
The polling firm Edison Research counts among its top clients Voice of America, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and the Middle East Broadcasting Networks, all of which are U.S. state-owned media that were created to disseminate pro-U.S. messaging in their respective regions. They all work under the U.S. Agency for Global Media, which is a U.S. government agency, and its website says that the media outlets serve, quote, the long-range interests of the United States.
So I guess my question, Wilmer, is can they at least be a little less obvious? What do you think?
No, they can't. And the pictures that we saw coming from England remind me of Charlottesville. No, they can't. And Garland and I have been talking about this for months. The United States intentionally backed Marine Machado in Venezuela. Mm-hmm. She was found not to be, she was not allowed to run by the Venezuelan Supreme Court because she was operating as a foreign agent, I think for Peru, against the interests of Venezuela. And so the United States intentionally backs a candidate that they know is going to lose so that when the candidate does lose, they can cry foul.
Yeah.
And this Edison agency, it's just, it's not only do they promote U.S. propaganda, they're also a regime change agent.
Yeah. You know, it looks a lot like Georgia. It looks a lot like we did it in Ukraine in 2014. I mean, it's like the same formula. It's a template. They pick a certain person who has ties to Washington and the State Department, and then they create an opposition, and then they create civil unrest in the streets. I mean, my God, you could just take the same country and just change it over. Is it Milo seeing that, or why does anybody else see that? I'm thinking, Garland.
Well, if you get down to it, what it comes down to is a refusal to recognize Venezuela as the government of Venezuela's sovereign right to run their own election and to make a decision as to whether their election was fair or unfair or anything else. That's the same with
But why?
Russia.
We're down to 30 seconds. But why? The oil? Is it the natural?
Venezuela has a lot of oil and has the potential to be an extremely powerful regional country due to their natural resources and oil. And they've got a great labor, you know, pool, et cetera. So they have to be stopped.
And socialism.
That's fascinating. Well, yeah, everybody's a socialist or a fascist. It's like the only two terms we use any day. One side says the other one's a fascist. This side said they're communist. End of conversation and the debate stops. What a shame. We don't do that here. Thank God. That's our show. Remember to always look outside your own box. Truths don't live in boxes, nor are they fascists or socialists. I'm Rick Sanchez. We'll be looking for you next time.